Emily and Amy here. The Indigo Girls are in the studios. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Hi.
Welcome to our humble abode here.
Thank you.
Top of McVeigh Hall on the University of Kentucky campus.
Feels good.
Now, my memory is kind of slipping here. Is this the first time you've been in Lexington?
No.
Well, that's right. You all performed over at Singletary Center a number of years ago.
We've been here a bunch of times.
Probably been here a bunch.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. That's We've been around, you know, for 25 years. So
25 years?
Yep.
And you're still getting along okay? That's great.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep. It's all good.
25 years of fun and happiness. Have you lost track of how many shows you've done? Have you been keeping track of that? Is somebody keeping a diary?
We should have, but
we've lost track.
We've lost track.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, has it changed over the years? I mean, you know, I know you started out in the small clubs down there in Georgia. What's it like for you now? I mean, have you gotten used to the big crowds, the sold-out shows? How's that?
Well, it goes up and down, so we sort of get a chance to do all things all the time, you know, because sometimes we have big crowds and sometimes we still have small crowds.
So. I guess maybe it's a situation now where you get to pick and choose where you're going to play and, you know, what kind of crowd you're going to perform in front of, right?
Well, recently we just decided to play some very, very small clubs just to get back to that and have fun. And we did that in three different locations. But we have an agent who puts tours together, and he's really been instrumental in shaping our career. We've been with him since the beginning. So he just goes out there and sees what makes sense. And then Amy and I do those tours unless there's something that highly objectionable, which doesn't usually happen.
You know, I was thinking about this. It just came to me. You've been a duo for a long time, and it's been very, very successful for you. Obviously, a little bit more acoustic on your side, Emily, and then Amy, you came in with a little bit more of an edgy sound, and that combination has worked well for you for a quarter century now. A quarter of a century. Oh, my God. But, you know, there's this resurgence of duos. You know, you had the White Stripes, the Black Keys. Have you thought about that? I mean, you know, we started that kind of thing, or we've been doing that for a while.
No.
It's kind of cool to think about, though. You know, they're having a lot of success.
We love those groups, but we don't really attribute any of the success to us.
No, not at all. People just find their own combinations that work.
It's fun to think about, you know. They do some great sounds on stage,
as
I'm sure you will tonight. You've got the double CD out now called Staring Down the Brilliant Dream. It's the live collection. Tell us about that.
Well, it came out last month, and it's from live recordings of our shows from the period of time of 2006 to 2009. Our front of house guy had the multi-track recording capabilities, and so he presented us with a whole bunch of shows from which we could pick, and Amy and I went through hours and hours and hours of songs and narrowed it down, and then he mixed it. His name is Brian Spicer. He mixed it, and the fans are really taking to it. The artwork is really, really cool. An Atlanta artist named Aaron Danger did the packaging. It's kind of like a book, so it's unusual and unique. And so the whole thing really came together, and I don't even like live records, and I like this record. So,
well, of course.
Yeah, but that's not a given.
She really doesn't like our live records, usually.
You said you went through hours and hours. How do you pick what it is you want on there? You know, how do you choose which ones you want?
It's kind of a tiered process. It's kind of like, you know, you pick things that just sound good to you. And then we might have five or six versions of one song, and we narrow it down to one version. And
we want some band stuff on there.
Yeah, we sort of balance between band and acoustic, Emily and Amy songs. And sometimes we have a trio. We throw songs in there that have special guests on them and try to just kind of spread it out. But it's down to the performance and sort of what the vibe was. And you just keep narrowing it down until you get the songs. We ended up mixing about 37 songs, and I guess we have
31
on the set. So.
Staring Down the Brilliant Dream, you can find out more about that at your website, and tell us what it is there, Emily.
IndigoGirls.com.
Simple enough. And talk about keeping it simple. We got two women with two guitars here. What you going to play with us, or for us, right now?
We're going to play a song called Love of Our Lives. We have a studio version of this on our latest studio record, Poseidon and the Bitter Bug, and this is also on the Staring Down the Brilliant Dream. And this is us with hoarse voices kind of early in the day. Love of Our Lives. Here we go.
I open my hands up to see what I've got. My days slip like coins into a slot. They are gone. The shadows lie long. taking on a broken machine, left unattended like most of my dreams, rusted components of an unmarked song. And soda, or any combination, starts the reaction.
Live music on WUKY, University of Kentucky Public Radio, WUKY Lexington, WUKY.org, and WUKY HD1. It's Indigo Girls. I gotta say it. I do believe that your voices were meant to be together from birth. You know, it's amazing. I get chills when I hear you singing, especially when you're live right here in the studios.
Thanks.
Fantastic. What was the moment, and I'm not real sure it really matters to me how you met, but what was the moment that the two of you started singing together and you realized you really had something here? What was that like for you?
Well, I think more than the feeling of we had something was just how pure fun it was. I mean, Amy was already playing guitar. I was playing guitar. We were both writing songs. We became friends because we joined the chorus in high school. So we were just like, you know, buddies. And we had this great, fun thing that we could do together. And, you know, Amy had a lower voice and I had a higher voice. And she had a more muscular style of playing and I had a more picky style. So right away, we were able to just have this fun thing and explore, you know, a greater breadth of music than each one of us was doing on our own. So it was super cool.
Was it a realization on your own parts, or were people kind of going, hey, wait a minute, you two have really got something here. What was happening? How did that work for you?
Well, we were so young, you know, we were in high school, like 16 years old. So it was more like, you know, our friends and like, we did have one English teacher named Ellis Lloyd that had taught Emily and then taught me, because Emily's a year ahead of me, and he definitely focused in on us and encouraged us to keep doing it and was really remarking on it all the time, and he was pretty much our mentor for years and trying to kind of get us to develop it and stuff. So you know, we had him saying that, and then of course our families were very supportive of it. And
we're mostly, so glad.
You know, you're when you're in high school, though, you know, it's all about what's fun. It's
you hit the nail on the head. They're supportive parents. Boy, yeah. You know, that's a good thing to think about these days. We need more of them.
Yeah, totally. We were fortunate. Totally.
It's a big deal.
Blessed, indeed. Now, the song you just sang, Love of Our Lives, it's on Poseidon and the Bitter Bug. Tell us a little bit, because we've got some issues and answers we want to talk about here in just a couple minutes, and then some other fun things. But I want to know, what is the writing process like for the two of you? Are you doing lyrics and you're doing, how's that work? You just kind of come together, or one of you says, I've got something, and then you
separate.
Work on
completely separate.
Who wrote that one?
I did.
Okay. Did you present it to Amy, and then she says, oh, wait a minute, this might be fun to twist this around a little bit? Or
yeah, there's different ways that we hear each other's songs. Sometimes, mostly Amy will start singing songs and sound check during the live show, for the live shows, and I'll start to hear them, or she'll perform them solo during the sets, and then I'll hear them that way. But when it comes time to make a record, we just get together, and we either give each other a CD of the songs or MP3 them now, and then we set up a schedule either at Amy's house or my house, both, and get together and start just jamming through the songs, and it's a brainstorming session. So
are your fans able to pick out who's written what? Because I know with Lennon McCartney it was obvious, you know, okay, wait a minute, John wrote that, Paul wrote that. Are your fans able to pick it out?
Well, mostly now, because whoever wrote the song sings the lead vocal to
okay,
it.
Okay, so. Gotcha. That makes it easier.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, you could probably tell anyway, but I think more so our styles have morphed a little bit into, if I sang some of Amy's ballads, you wouldn't know necessarily that she had written them, but it's more like a voice recognition thing, I think. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think we cross over more.
More than we used to.
That's cool. Checking with each other.
Yeah.
Very nice. You guys have been really busy. I know that you're very concerned about what's happening in the Gulf. You took this trip to Montana. Was it the two of you, or was it just you, Amy?
No, it was both of us.
Tell us about that.
Well, we have a group, an environmental organization that we started in the early 90s with some Native American activists, namely Winona LaDuke, and it was to support the work being done, environmental work and cultural sustainability work in indigenous communities by indigenous groups. So it's all Native run and Native supported, and we fund, you know, Native groups. And we chose to go that route because it just felt like the most effective route. And
really?
There was no personal
connection there?
We heard Winona speak, and we realized that we wanted to funnel our environmental work through the indigenous lens. That perspective worked the best for us because those are where a lot of the frontline battles really are. So
how's that working for you?
It works great. I mean, a lot of the groups we fund have won very significant battles against, like, nuclear waste dumps.
I was going to say, you're taking it to Washington?
We do sometimes. Right now, one of the main things we work on is energy sustainability and trying to shut down bad energy projects and sort of create a new market and new energy sustainability projects that reservations are sort of focusing on, like wind power and some solar power. And
good.
So that's, we went to Montana to host actually a group of women called the Women's Donor Network. They're really radical philanthropist women who wanted to look at the projects that we had funded and in the native community up there. And we were focusing on an oil development called the Tar Sands Oil Development that's in Alberta, Canada. And the pipelines are going to come down through Montana. And also a lot of the machinery that's going to be used to build the refineries, that is going to be trucked through Montana, which means they're going to have to build all these new roads and widen the roads that exist and create a lot of damage to the rivers up there and the environment. And so it's an issue that ties the Alberta sort of indigenous people with the Montanans and with the whole U.S. really, because it's about oil consumption. So we went up there to talk about that and to focus on projects that we were funding in the past, like wind development and a youth project for language development and language restoration in the Blackfeet community. And we took these women to show them, because they are interested in what's going on and they want to fund really good projects. And it was a very cool tour. We played in we always play in some Indian communities, and then we play in like a city that's close by and sort of try to build that bridge between Indian and non-Indian and show the issues to our fans. And so that, because that's really a void. A lot of people don't know what's going on in Native communities, especially in the eastern half of the United States. But it's a void everywhere. So that's kind of what we do. And you know, we just, a lot of other musicians help us out and give us money and fund different projects. So it's pretty successful. It's been going for, I guess, almost 20 years now.
It's fantastic.
18 years.
You sound passionate. Give us a website.
It's honorearth.org.
Okay. That's Honor the Earth. Tell us about Girls Rock Camp.
Well, it's very encouraging, actually, you know, nationally. I mean, it kind of started with the Riot Girl music movement out of the Northwest, I think, personally. But then now there are all these girls rock camps that are sprouting up across the country. And what they do is they bring, allow young girls, very young girls, some, you know, like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, to get together and to be mentored by musicians and to form their own rock bands and then to do performances. So when Amy and I were coming up, there were very few women rock role models. You know, you had a plethora of acoustic or folk models, but not rock and roll. And so the Atlanta Girls Rock Camp is a group of one of those camps that we have a very special affiliation with, obviously, because of proximity, and a friend of ours is on the board and stuff. So I just went to their showcase the other night, and it just blew my mind. Just band after band of these young girls. Some of them had only played their instruments for a handful of days, just a few days, learning how to play drums. It's very encouraging. And those girls, they were so fired up. It's just a pure spirit of growth and inspiration, and it's good for everybody to have girls playing rock.
I think it's something you guys are passing along, you know, the encouragement you got from your families and, you know, the mentoring.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I'm glad you're involved with that. Now, I got to tell you, I was looking at, I check NPR.org every morning just for the headlines, see what's happening around the country and the world. And I stumbled across something about Lilith Fair. And then within that article, it talked about a person that, well, they kind of associated with what's happening with Lilith Fair. I won't really go into that, but it was Lady Gaga. Everybody's talking about Lady Gaga and the influence she's having on music today, in particular women's music. Any thoughts? What do you think of Lady Gaga?
Well, I'm a fan of Lady Gaga, so
good.
She's fun.
My thoughts are, I like her, and I like what she does, and I like how I like the way she doesn't alienate any community. She's very, like, I don't know, like, queer, straight, you know, everything. And it's like what Madonna was.
It's interesting that you say that, because my teenage daughter swears that it's a guy.
It's not. We've met her.
It's amazing. You know, I said, no, honey.
We've met her. Yeah, we did a show that she played after us.
What was that like?
Long time ago. Well, we didn't know that much about her, but she was perfectly nice and everything.
Yeah,
and,
totally. You know, but I mean, you do have to
there's
thank
a real human
Madonna.
Being underneath yeah, all of that. Right?
Mother Madonna. You always have to give it up to someone who comes before, really.
Matriarch of,
but good so for Lady Gaga.
Yeah,
good for
she's
her.
Not original. She's just taking it out a little bit for
well,
her.
Well, I wouldn't say original, she's not original, though. I think she's very
really?
Original. Yeah, I do. I mean, I've seen a lot of videos, and it's, you know, there's people like her that focus a lot on the, it's like what Laurie Anderson did. It's like what Sia does, you know, what Madonna did, and they all have their own unique, you know, originality. And I mean, I don't know. It's cool. Like, my dad loves Lady Gaga. I think that's neat, you know?
Yeah. When it's amazing, isn't it?
People that
old
are 10
like
her.
Us.
And then, well, no, he's older than you.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, he is.
Well, that's cool. What's his favorite song?
He doesn't know. He just liked it when she sung with Elton John on the Grammys a lot.
There
he,
you go.
And he's just like, I really like that woman. She is really cool. And
she's so young, too.
She's so neat looking. That's what he kept saying.
Hey, what's it like being independent now, not being with a big label?
It's great. It was, you know, it was time. And we signed with Hollywood as the last, well, I sort of pushed for it as a last ditch effort to sort of move into maybe just expand our audience a bit, like through movies in particular, you know, owned by Disney, and we were promised a lot of opportunity that never panned out. And so it just, when they dropped us, we were in the process of making our new record anyway, and Mitchell Froom was on board to produce, and we just, everybody cut us a break, and it was wonderful, and we made that record, and we were liberated. So it feels really great. I think we're more productive now than we ever have been, because we can just put stuff out when we want, and we have our team and everything's in-house, and we've been around long enough to develop all the relationships we need to make whatever happen. So it's been great.
You don't have this connection of responsibility to some office in some faraway city?
Yeah, and we can get stuff done faster. I mean, honestly, you just cutting out a whole bureaucracy of people, which is, and they're often very great people, you know, that are very creative.
And you can produce it at your own rate.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And you can use whatever, you know, artist you want to use to do certain things. You just do whatever you want to do as long as you can fund it and you can make it can make sense financially. And that feels good, too, to be making those decisions because we don't want to waste.
Let me give you an opportunity to do some mentoring right now. Any words of advice to up-and-coming musicians, new singer-songwriters?
Well, make use of all your opportunities, you know, MySpace and recording digitally now is so much cheaper than it used to be. And now you got girls rock camps and there are house concerts going on everywhere. People are just being really creative about how to get their music out there. So I would just say take advantage of that and do it because you love it, not because you're chasing something, I would say.
And if you're, I mean, I think songwriting is the, you know, if you're going to talk about this kind of music, like the kind of music that you guys play and more of a album-based sort of music and not as much image-oriented, so it's a different field. You know, if you're interested in image stuff, that's a different thing, like pop stuff. But if you're interested in this kind of stuff, where songwriting and kind of a catalog of records, you should start writing as much as you can. Just that should be your main focus, because that's what separates the artists from each other is songwriting and the ability to write a good song and have your own material and people can relate to that, and it helps you develop your audience. And then the next thing that you need to do is you need to play in front of as many people as possible.
Hey, will you do us a favor?
Yep.
Sure. Will you come back?
Yes, yeah. We will.
Please do. Yeah.